you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, riding with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, the codes of conduct, how to become a member, how to donate if you want to, how to get more involved in the literacy program, the sports programs, or the surveys that they have. There's a Learning Center tab, and if you hover your mouse right over that Learning Center tab, or if you're on your phone, you hit the drop-down arrow of the Learning Center tab, you'll see there's resources that you can use as far as audio, political resources, books, survival information, legal cases, videos, all to your disposal. And there's also a store where you can support them. And once again, the website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, my co-host Patrick Irvin, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma September, all of our hosts for all of our wonderful podcasts that we have every week right here on the Freedom Train Network. And, you know, on our website, you can download our app. So, once again, the website is www.freedomtrainradio.com. And for all my Android users, there's a Freedom Train Network app. It's going to come for the iPhone sometime soon, but, you know, we Android over here. Remember to, on our website and through our social media, check out that we are doing our Black Movie Playoff. So we are breaking it down from our, I think we had like 64 or even more than that. I can't even remember. We had so many movies, but we're breaking it down. We're going through our brackets, and we're releasing the audio of it so you can see where we are, the who, what, where, when, why, and how of it. So once again, check out our website. Check out our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Freedom Train Network. We're on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Really going down in the South. Patrick, my brother, what's going on?
Chilling, man. You know.
Yeah.
How I do. How I does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. Yeah.
You want the freestyle?
You know what? Not today. You know, sometimes, you know, the spirit gotta move you. You know, otherwise you get like whack bars like most of these rappers out here nowadays. Yeah, y'all suck.
Man, how you ain't got it in you, man? You supposed to be from the South, man.
You know, sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't. You know what I'm talking about? Hey, I can't.
You supposed to be from the.
But I can say.
You supposed to be an MC. You supposed to be an MC, man.
I am an MC.
But so if I drop this, if I start beatboxing right now, you supposed to kill it.
Nah, I'm a modern MC. Modern MCs don't. We don't freak.
Okay. All right. So you the iPhone MC.
Yeah. I'm a
micro
MC. You know, I'm a micro
MC. See the problem with you, bro, is you ain't got that throwback in you, man.
Nah.
You gotta have that throwback in you, bro.
You know the problem with you, always trying to throw some shit back. Like, why don't you just keep it? You know what I'm saying? Why? Well, like, if I gotta throw it back, then I don't want it. Right? You feel me?
It ain't fishing. It ain't like we fishing, though.
That what it sound like.
You got to get your mind right, bro.
Nah,
but anyway.
I'm not even. Look. Hey, for all y'all that don't know how old I am, Joe and I are the same age, in the same age range anyways. I think you got me by, what, like a year?
I'm a year older than you, legit.
So, you know.
I don't know. I'm 84.
All right, who we got today, Joe?
So, I know, because I won. I said I got your brain all scrambled and stuff.
Negative.
Hey, man. You can't. I'm like Professor X from the X-Men. In your mind.
So you got Xavier's disease.
Stop trying to break that down. I forget I said that. Anyway, today's guest, we got a good brother on the show today. So, my first interaction with this brother was about 2 or 3 years ago, where it was a Father's Day event. Myself and Janae White, we got together to put on a Father's Day conversation about the importance of black fatherhood specifically. And this brother was one of the fathers that we had at our round table, and he was representing. He gave a lot of good information. He does a lot of good in the community. If you follow him on social media, you'll see the impact that he have on the youth that he is coming in contact with on a regular basis. He is using something called trauma-informed care solutions to help the kids that he's dealing with. He has a background that is similar to a lot of the kids that he's been working with, so he can understand where they come from. He can understand what they're thinking, understand some of the emotions that they are experiencing on a regular basis. He's using something as well called social-emotional counseling, and we're going to learn a lot more about that. So what I want everybody to do, y'all, to get up out y'all seats and put y'all hands together for my big brother, Mr. Kevin Warren.
Hey, man, what's happening?
Yeah, what's up, what's up, what's up?
I don't know exactly how old you are. You're just going to throw me up there now.
Hey, man. Hey, I'm just in case.
You see what I'm saying? I'm just throwing you up there. Just because I got a lot of kids, you throw me up there, huh?
Hey, man, just in case, man. Just give me your OG status.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Man, I appreciate you. I appreciate you both. You and Pat both bringing me on, bro.
No problem, no problem, brother, man. Happy to have you here. Definitely appreciate what you do in the community. Appreciate what you do with the youth, especially the example you set as a father, as a husband, and everything that you do in the community. You definitely walk what you talk, so we're happy to have you here.
Man, I appreciate that.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. So, Pat, man, you know you got the first question, man. Let's kick this thing off. You there?
See, man, you done made him mad.
Yeah. Where you at, Pat? Oh, he might have had an issue with his internet or something. But I'll go ahead and kick it off, man. Let Pat get his stuff straight. So,
yeah.
You know, I gave my introduction about you, but kind of want to get deeper into who you are as a person and kind of what led to you becoming who you are. So please give us some background information about yourself and kind of help us understand what social emotional consulting is.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like you said, brother, I'm a father first. I'm a father and a husband. I think that's when we talk about who my name really speaks for itself as Kevin Warren, but it really talks about just my kids, man, my kids and my family. So first and foremost, I'm a family man, husband and a mm-hmm. father. I'm from Saginaw, Michigan. I'm what y'all consider a snowbird, man. I got tired of that snow. Right after graduation, I actually boarded a flight, man, and came down here to go to FAMU. I was a bio pre-med major, and that quickly changed. Long story short, man, long journey. From the heights of Seven Hills, you know, made that fall like a lot of us do. Mm-hmm. Kind of made a pathway for myself in what is now what you're considering social emotional consulting. You said earlier counseling, and I want to be clear, man. It's a good thing that we say this first and foremost. What I do is not counseling, right? Because
okay.
counseling, man, that's a whole nother ball game. Licensing, you know, different level of education required. And legalities, right? So I stay away from the term counseling and what I do. I'm a coach. I'm a consultant. Like, I'm a social-emotional consultant. We do and specialize my business, my company, the Life Group, the Love Identity Foundation and Encouragement Group, which I started back in 2015. We do social and emotional learning consulting. And which really what that is, social and emotional learning, let's break it down there, it's really just the process in which we understand and manage our emotions, set and achieve goals, you know, kind of how we feel or show others emotions or empathy, how we establish and maintain our relationships, and kind of overall decision-making, right? So for me, when we talk about social and emotional learning, we look at it from a business standpoint of what really makes you tick, right? What is it that really drives behaviors from a social and emotional standpoint? So that's kind of what we focus on. We really help we work with our clients such as Department of Children and Families, Man Trio, DJJ, DC. I mean, we go down the list. We do a lot with independent living across the state, DJJ in a couple other states, Michigan, Texas, Georgia. So just kind of we do a lot, but it's really all focused around social and emotional learning, helping people discover and heal the foundation of what really drives their behaviors.
Okay, okay. Now, that's what's up, man. I like that. I like that because it hits it from an angle that a lot of other people don't even think about, like, as far as interacting with the children from trying to learn them on many different levels, so that social-emotional level, to see how different things impact them from that level is definitely good.
It's interesting because, though, and because we do that, we all know it. I don't do anything that's special or unique outside of identifying it and putting value to it, right? We all know about social. We all know, you know, we all can see a young person, or we all can see someone and realize the behavior isn't really what the problem is. Like, what happened? You know, it's something behind the scenes, and we all do it. We all kind of operate within social and emotional realm. We always say you and your feelings, but we are always in our feelings, right? So it's just really being able to share with, like, DCF and these agencies, bro, that we're measuring and incentivizing the wrong thing. Like, we're putting measurements in the wrong place, right? And instead of measuring from a social and emotional standpoint, we're measuring from a clinical or a academic standpoint. And that's just, it's just not, you can't do that. It's too, we're way too far from that.
Right, right. Okay, I get you. I get you. That makes sense, though. Okay, Pat, you back. You back. Yeah. We missed you, man. We were crying.
Nah, I doubt
that. I thought he was mad.
My VPN glitched out. So, you know, when your VPN go, you lose everything. So,
Right.
I'm set back up now, though. But what I was saying was, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was saying you're only the second guest that we've ever had in the 4+ years we've been doing, well, actually, what, 6+ years now that we've been doing this is ever even mentioned social and emotional learning. Which says a lot about how many people are, how aware people are of it. You know, so this is kind of off the beaten path, but why don't you think there are more people going around talking about and championing social emotional learning, and especially in our community?
To be honest, man, in our community, in the Black community, we don't acknowledge, it's stigmatized when we talk about emotions, right? So when you think about emotions, we equate that and stigmatize that to being soft. So we all know what it is, but again, we don't necessarily address it. Social and emotional learning is not new to the community of service. It's new to us, right? So this is a buzzword that's been around for a long time. I was a jitterbug when social and emotional learning was a thing. But for me, I think why I'm so passionate about it is because it's power. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, man, to be able to help articulate and explain in layman's terms why behaviors are what they are, like, that's turning the light on for some folks, man, that changes everything. And it's so important to be able to tell somebody, bro, dealing with your emotions is not making you soft. A matter of fact, not dealing with your emotions and therefore being reckless, wild, and abandoned in danger, that's being soft and stupid, right? So being able to deal with your emotions is tough as hell. So that's actually, you know, backwards, right? So that's kind of why I'm kind of championing that thing right there, is bringing it to our community, because, man, it's really, we've been doing this forever. It's just now putting terms to it.
Right. Now, that makes sense. So, but go ahead, Pat. I had to do the first question, so you got the second one, man.
I just did a question. Were you not listening? Did you not,
Matt?
Joe, Like, so, Pat, Joe, what's happening with you right now? Let's talk about your emotions, because they're impacting your ability to listen.
Pat, that was an off-the-beaten question. That was off-the-beaten path.
Joseph,
I was thinking.
Joseph, you're in a safe space.
I was trying to be courteous to you.
Joseph.
I'm trying to be courteous, but here you go.
Joseph,
here you go.
What's happening in your life right
now? We're not doing this interview, okay?
Okay. All right.
We're going to fight, Pat. All right. Well, anyway, forget it. I'll try to be courteous. I ain't doing it no more.
Well, right, don't be it. Curtis. Your name ain't Curtis.
But, so what led to you really embracing social emotional learning, social emotional consulting? Like, who taught you this? Where did you first hear about it? What life events? Like, what all led up to you being introduced to this and wanting to be able to use it?
Good question. Before this life, right, I was homeless, right? So I flunked out of college at highest of Seven Hills, and that drop down to the bottom of Seven Hills was really a life experience for me. I became, you know, strung out on drugs, man, out there on dope, homeless, flunked out of school. You know, I really had a spiral for about a year and a half. I really spiraled down to my rock bottom. But then on the way up, right, I ended up, you know, kind of having a kid, right, getting married, having a kid, and working at Mainline. I'll tell you that for me, working at Mainline helped me because I was able to learn how to be a businessman, right, learn how to become an executive. And in that realm, I wrote a book, right? So it afforded me a good life. I worked my ass off, man, at that company. I worked there for 8 years, and I, you know, kind of rose pretty high in the company. I was, you know, one of the infrastructure services directors. I managed the full West Coast and Brazil. And so that afforded me the opportunity and the finances to be able to kind of start traveling a little bit. So I would go back home to Saginaw, Michigan, and I start talking to my old high school, right? So I went to go talk to the old high school, just some of my teachers that let me kind of just pop in and, you know, start rapping with the kids and telling them, like, though, not just don't do drugs, right, but just really breaking it down, like, how it happened. And so for me, it clicked, man. Like, I remember the last time I went before I started my business, something happened, man. It was like all of the kids, they skipped lunch. So I did two sessions. Right, I did two classes, and the kids, so I was about to leave, and then all of the kids, like, they skipped lunch, and they was like, yo, I just want to ask you some more questions. And the whole plane ride back, that's when I really started writing the book. I was like, shit, it's something behind this. There's something to this. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, man, I wasn't able to kind of sit behind that desk, so I started funding trips on my own, not charging nothing, just funding trips back and forth to Michigan every month and a half, you know what I'm saying, back and forth. And I started researching and reading books and developing programs, developing workshops, and kind of giving them away for free just to kind of see how it worked and get feedback. And over the years, man, that's just kind of allowed me to open some doors with Department of Children and Family, FAMU, TRIO programs, EJJ. It just kind of one thing led to another, man, and the book kind of took off and just was diligent, man. It was hard as hell, man. I was homeless.
Right.
Like I said, went homeless again through this journey, bro. Like, and we lost everything. So it's just social emotional learning, man. It's just the best teacher for me was my life, right? It was just being able to get up, navigate my own situation, right? And then being able to not stop there, but put pathways and perspectives for other people to follow. I developed a mantra that I started with my business. And it was always to be listening, always to be learning, and always to be leaving, right? So I'm always listening. I'm a speaker, but we talk too damn much. And I learned that if you just shut up and listen sometimes, it leads to learning. Then I started learning a lot, man, just really absorbing, reading different books, philosophers, psychology, you know, different things, which led to feeling that desire and education enough to leave something. I felt equipped to leave something. And so that's kind of what this journey started. That's when I started the business and kind of doing what we're doing, leaving a legacy for my kids.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. I think when we hear stories like that, so many people go through ups and downs that they are able to really connect with stories such as yours, but not you not dwelling on the downs. You were recognizing the downs, accepting them, and taking your lessons from them and moving forward. But, you know, looking, making sure that you highlight the building part of it. And that's one thing I like about your story is you are focusing on the building and telling others that you can build your life up to where you want it to be as well. These are essential tools, practical tools, not just fluff. Or like you said, like I love how you say you realize that sometimes we be talking too dang on much, and we need to be quiet and listen to what the people that we're talking to are saying, because we can better help them if we start listening and stop doing all the talking. And so that's like golden for me. That let me know, you know, furthermore confirmation that you serious about what you're doing, and not just serious, but you're passionate about making sure that the people that you're helping, that you actually help them rather than just trying to be famous. And so, and that made me feel good.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It's important, bro. I mean, it's important. I want to touch on one thing you said was, you know, kind of not dwelling on the downs. But I'm going to be honest, man. I think that's from a business perspective. When I started this business, it's a whole heck of a lot of people that want to say they're mentors, coaches, that have programs and different things of that nature. So, I mean, I have to take my business brain and say, well, Kevin, what the hell makes you different? Like, what is it? And the truth is, while everybody tries to help, not everybody, right? I don't want to put that out there. But while a lot of us try to tell us to not focus on the downs and just keep pushing, that's where your magic sauce is, though, right? That's where the gold is. That's where the diamond is. It's in the bullshit. Like, in the hardest stuff that you've endured in your life, that's where the most valuable tools for your success are. So we try to help. That's why social and emotional part started to become so important, because if you're not ready socially and emotionally, shit, you're not going to be able to go back to that part of your life and really deal with it.
Yeah.
So that's what I realized.
Yeah.
Nah, you gotta deal with the social and emotional foundation so you can go back to those horrible things that happened to you and uncover and get what you need to get so you can bring it back to this current safe space and build your goddamn dream.
Basically. Wow, that's real talk, though. That's definitely real talk.
Yeah, I like that because it's true. And what he said, you know, to be able to capitalize off the low point and to be able to, you know, I like the way you put it, to be able to mine the low points of your life. But like you said, you got to be able to deal with reliving those moments.
Absolutely.
That's powerful right there, because that's something that you don't hear a lot when people are talking. And Joe knows, because we talk all the time, because, you know, the whole life coach, performance coach, this, that, and the third, you know, there are so many of them out there. There are so many of them that don't know what they're talking about, or they read one or two books and decided to go ahead and start a business thinking they can help everybody, and they got all these other things that they got going on that they haven't worked through. But you very rarely hear somebody speak to what you just spoke to, as eloquently as you spoke to it at that, which is, you know, like, you got to be emotionally in a place to where you can go and relive the most damaging and hurtful and down parts of your life. And be in a place where you can relive that experience over and over and over again as you mine the jewels out of it.
Yep.
Like, that's without, hard as hell.
Bro, without emotional influence, like, to go back in time, but realizing, it's almost like whispering to yourself, you're safe, it's not real, you're safe, just go get what you got to get and come back. But you think about it, we spend, most of us, when we're in shambles, because we're trying to avoid, hide, or run away from those moments. See, we live years, decades, living and suppressing those things, running from them, out of that fear, and then we never develop what it takes. That's why a lot of times people, especially in our community, I remember my older brother, church, he was like, man, every time I go to church, I start crying. So he stopped going to church. Like, counseling. You go to counseling and you get to feeling emotional and you stop going.
That's because we don't have and we don't develop from childhood the social and emotional foundation to actually go down and mine, like you said, Pat, mine our low moment. As you know, mining is deadly, you know, and it can be. Some of us crack. Some of us go crazy when we relive those moments.
That's the beauty of what you're saying, though, is that because there is a gap between a good therapist or a good somebody that's trained to help you evolve in the, or move in these spaces, and what you're doing, there's a gap between like the good therapist and what most people get. And because even myself, having gone through therapy and having taken enough courses in psychology to be a therapist, I'm not certified, I will say that, but I've taken all of the coursework, just ain't turned in, I ain't took the test. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. You being able to take people, like, that's where I think, like, the consulting piece comes in, because even therapists, there are a lot of therapists that don't know how to do what you're talking about right now, and they can't help other people through that process. So you sit in on a bad therapy session, and it'll wreck you for a long time.
Man, and that what you're saying, and that's what a big thing. One of our services that we call is gap consulting, right? That's what we offer with DCF and the major companies and organizations, the agencies. Is there's a clinical piece. Right, there's a clinical piece that we measure on, right? We qualify based on clinical. How many books you read, how much education hours, how many service hours you have. But the piece that typically disqualifies us from being successful is lived experience. If you live some of this shit, most times you're now disqualified from getting that education and getting those credentials. So therefore, you no longer have that space to do it. So it's almost like you said, it is a gap, because truthfully, none of these things were written or read and learned from a book, right? Until you have slept on the concrete, like, and really have toiled with, I'm homeless, but I just got my girl pregnant, do we do an abortion, or until you really, really thought about those things, you can say what you would do, but people who've been there, it's a whole nother level, and that's the social side. On our staff, we have a clinical case manager, a master service social worker, but we also have a head life coach, right? So someone who would master DJJ, gang violence, gang relations, who've lived these experiences, and they work together because we realize case management without, like you have, is clinical. That's based on organizations. Yeah. They build clinically.
Yeah.
But social and emotional learning, life coaching, what we call life coaching, love, identity, foundation, and encouragement, life coaching is the what was tending to the field before you go sit in the counselor, right? It's, all right, now listen, the counselor, you're going to think they're full of shit, but understand this. This is the, you know, you're going to be able to help till that ground before they go to those services, so now it's more effective. And that's where we found our niche, is being able to bridge that gap for services to become more effective.
That's exactly what I think is needed. And that's why, like I said, I even got a little bit excited listening to you, because that's where we need the coaches and consultants, bridging that gap. That's where they, in my opinion, that's where they need to be. Because, like I said, you go to a therapist section and it'll wreck you, especially if it's not a good therapist. Like, you'll be wrecked for a while.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be therapy-induced depression, full-on depression, and you'll be stuck.
We call it taking a lid off and not being able to put a lid back on before they leave. Right. Right. That's the worst.
Right. Ever. Right.
So I'm loving it because I'm hoping a lot more people, like, when they hear this, because I know. Some of the people that are listening are going to be thinking along the lines of getting a life coach or getting a therapist, you know, I hope they hear it and they get a message that it is something that can happen in conjunction. But even to the people that are out there, like, I think I can be a life coach. Like pay attention to what, like he just said, about standing in the gap and being able to help people mind their issues, and even being able to go back and mind your own life experience. Like it's a lot more serious than just, I'm going to get a lot of money and be your best friend.
Yeah. Right. That's not, it's way a lot more difficult than that. Because I know I got my certification in life coaching and realized that I don't want to be a life coach. I want to give life skills. Yeah. And so it's just, and those are two different things. And it's just being able to understand where you are and move accordingly through that journey. So I wanna ask this question though, because you talked about being homeless, you talked about being a young father, talked about flunking out of college, and we all face life challenges. Life, I always tell people, life is going to kick you square in your nose, and how you get up from that, or even if you get up from that, says a lot about you. So, how? Because you talked about writing your book. You talked about these different things that happened once you were able to get back on your feet. But how were you able to get back on your feet? Like what helped you recover from where you were, and what was like at least one of the biggest lessons you learned overall about life or yourself recovering from where you were in life?
Man, that's deep simple, right? So the short answer to that is God, right? No questions, no hesitation. How was I able to overcome with God? Understanding not religion, but God. Understanding the essence of love. What is love? That's like my everything, right? Life, love, identity, foundation, encouragement. Find life, you know, it's love. So understanding God, understanding love was without a doubt what got me through. True story. I stole a PDA phone. Bro, like, out there on the street, I stole a PDA phone. UPS delivered it. I really just thought I stole a package. That's what happened to the PDA phone. That was the back in the day where, you hear me say PDA phone, right? That was That was back in the day where it was like the first computer phones, where, like, it was Apple, iPad, you know, it wasn't even a thing. iPhones wasn't even a thing. And so that's where I first started, like, being able to not just read scripture, but research, right, my history and understand what love is, bro, and on the street, like, no joke, I wrote my book on the street. I used to live where Pace Center for Girls is right now, that's where I used to sleep at, up underneath that awning, right? I would basically be up all night under there, right, but resting there, and I would write. That's why I started writing the book. That's why I started writing and understanding what love is. And so that's what I got. I God helped me through that, overcome that, without a doubt. And the biggest lesson that I got from those challenges and such any challenge is to never quit, right? Like, realizing how powerful just keep going is was something that, I mean, was amazing to me because, and this may be, you know, like I said, trauma-informed. So like you said, Pat, it's a safe space. So, like, I wanted to die, man. Like, it was times like, this shit is hard, right? This is horrible. But the fact is, you woke up the next day, right? Or you got up, and it wasn't over. And so, what are you going to do, right? Like, your stomach's like, what are you going to do? And I just got, my mother used to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I didn't quit. So what I learned from that was, I had nothing. And I just didn't quit, and now look. So just imagine if I were to take research, education, discipline, positive relationships, just a bunch of other stuff, and put it with my just fact that I'm not going to quit. Well, I would thrive. And so that's kind of what I started to do, man. It's just put those two things together. I love God, I love people, and I will never quit. And regardless of where that takes me, I'm going to win. You know, that's the winning formula.
Right. Now, that's what's up, man.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
You good. You good.
So, I wanted to ask, what is We Are All We Need, Inc.? Like, how did that start, and why was it started?
Okay. That's my baby, right? So, in business, right, my business, I'm a businessman first, you know, second, right? So I'm a family man first, businessman second. Man of God is not even a thing. It's just the thing, right? So that's just not even a number. But We Are All We Need is a nonprofit. So for my business brain, the Life Group, the consulting firm, it's restricted, right? So I offer a lot of services that could be and should be considered nonprofit work. But for early in my development, I said, you know what? I don't want the government in my money. I don't want the government in my business. I don't want them to tell me how I can spend my money. And so I did not attain a 501c3. So just this year, last year, 2019, I bought one, right? So I bought a 501c3, which is We Are All We Need Incorporated, which it's a God thing, man. So it was titled We Are All We Need, and it was originally just aiming towards foster care, right, helping kids in foster care. So we kind of acquired the nonprofit organization. We brought on its developer, and he's amazing, right? And so we kind of partnered with him to create our businesses, which We Are All We Need is a coalition of businesses that specialize in land acquisition, real estate, human services, community revitalization, development, policy, and education. So it's literally like the Procter & Gamble of human services, right? So we all came together underneath and acquired a 501c3, which it started simply because there was enough of us that worked our ass off to get to a position to do something about it, right? But then we got there and realized it's set up to where if we do it by ourselves, we can only do so much, right? Like, it's literally set up that way. The systems don't talk, right? So if you, like, for instance, if I went through the normal way and got my social services degree, became a social worker, I would have dedicated my life to social services, likely straight with DCF. I would have never understood what DJJ does and what they have to do. I would never understood what Department of Education does. I would have stayed right there in DCF. It's so limited. Even if I would have became the Tony Robbins, only in DCF, I could only go so high. And so what we did was, looking at it, we said, well, you guys are in land acquisition. You guys are in real estate. I'm in social services, community revitalization. Y'all, like, we took all of our different businesses and formed a coalition and said, you know what? We can do this all our own. We can buy the land, buy and flip the houses, contract the houses. We can become the Medicaid provider offering the services. We can go end to end ourselves. And so that's what we did. We Are All We Need. It's literally in the name. That's what we believe. It started for that. People that look like us, I'm tired of depending on somebody else. You see what just happened with this, right?
Right.
Like, this will never happen again. Never.
Now, that's real. We should be in a position to be as self-sufficient as possible instead of waiting on somebody to give us handouts. And
if it goes public right now, what happens?
Oh, a lot of us are in trouble.
How many of us know how to hunt, track food, track our prey, skin a cat? How many of us know how to, don't eat a cat, but how many of us know how to skin something? How many of us know how to really survive and thrive, you know, outside of a system that we were not created to thrive in, right?
Right.
So that's why it was started. It's just, you know, again, going back to being sick and tired of being sick and tired.
If you got a skin that's real cat though. To eat, because you ain't got nothing else.
Right.
Better get you a pigeon.
Right. There's some good eating under that fur.
That's a good question, man.
Yeah.
No, so, I like that, because I think well, I don't think. The motto for our sponsor, PAX Inc., is we are all we need. We are what we've been waiting for. So, and then along the same lines of that. But, again, I think you hit on something again that was pretty powerful when you talked about the stratification of information, resources, and lanes in society, like how things don't talk, how things stay separated, how all of these things that should be interconnected aren't in the way the society is currently set up. So, like, that's, again, that's another, like, that's
right.
A huge egg you just dropped there.
Right. So how many years have you been working with our youth so far?
Locally here in Tallahassee, I have been 10 years. Wow, 10 years.
Okay.
10 years. Yeah, so we started working with high schoolers. We had a weekly group. We would do a weekly group with high schoolers, and then that kind of grew into high school as they went through high school, college. And so it started way back then, man, 2009, 2010.
Okay. And so from your 10, 11 years of working with at least the youth here in Tallahassee, what are some of the main issues that you've noticed that our youth is facing? And this is a three-part question. What are some of the main issues that you've seen they're facing? What do you think are the root causes of those issues? And from the ones that you've evaluated, what solutions do you think could be used to help the children and the families resolve a lot of the issues that they have?
Okay. Now jump in here and talk back to me on this, right, because this could take a...
I got you.
It's a few pieces to this, right? That was it's a lot of question in that.
I got you.
So it's going to break down. So it says from the year, the main issues that the youth are facing, and here's what's going to blow probably us all away. And really not, but maybe sex, right? So check this out. Right? It's layered, right? It's layered. So the surface issue is sex, right? Sex and lust. What that is a need for control. I've recognized we have a lot of programs. So one of the programs that we're just launching is a pilot program where we're going through and assessing youth that are in diversion or on probation, right? And then we're going to assign them a life coach, right? So we're going to help them matriculate through a bunch of the things that they have to navigate through in order to thrive. But so we did this first round of intake, man, and it blew me away that it's a need for control, and at their age and where they are, from socioeconomic status, right, to social emotional development or deficiency, they can only control what? Their body. They can't control what they can and can't buy. They can't control what they when and where they're going to eat, right, how they're going to sleep, when and how good. The only thing they can really control is their sexual organs, right? And so that need of control, they use it to gratify sex. And what sex does is it's more than just the physical connection, but it's that the chemical release that happens in sex, they're literally not of age to deal and manage with them properly. Paired with not having the social and emotional foundation to deal with what just happened and the environment that they're in, it's the perfect ingredient for what we see now. But the next part of the question was, what is the root cause? And that's trauma. Hands down.
Okay.
Adverse childhood experiences, brother. Trauma. That's what it's from. A kid, listen, right now, we got students that had to wake themselves up at 7 o'clock in the morning at 9, 10, 11 years old, walk 2 miles to catch a city bus to an auntie house, get off the city bus to walk a mile to the auntie house, to then go back to sleep, to wake up at around 8:30, 9 o'clock, to walk the half mile across the street thing to men, all to go to school. I don't know about you, but I wasn't walking across the street to catch the bus on time. I wasn't washing my butt on my own to do it. So at 11, I mean, that's trauma, right? Not having
it is.
Not even to eat, that's trauma. Those are all adverse childhood experiences. And so when we link that to science, they are all the time, literally all the time, in fight or flight mode. Like, they are in survival mode.
Yes, yes.
All the time.
Yes.
And the only thing that...
Yeah, and it's normalized.
The only thing that animals do, right, think about it. The only thing that you do out in the wild when you're in survival mode, other than surviving, is have sex. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You survive and have sex. That's all you do. And that's really what that's all the options that they've had. Because, like I said, a lot of their qualifying factors and a lot of their qualifying traumas led to these behaviors that disqualified them for all the shit they need. Right? Until they get arrested, here in our state, until you get arrested, until you get Baker Acted, until you get expelled, you're not eligible for services unless you have a mental health diagnosis. Well, guess what? How many of us got enough insurance to take our kid to Appalachia to get evaluated? Right?
Not a lot of us.
Right. So it's not until some shit happens that we try to get them any services engaged. And so your last question, what are the solutions? That's what we're doing, bro. Like, and I'm going to jump off. We got a lot of, we're crossing a lot of T's and dotting a lot of I's, but that's the life. That's the life center, and that's the village. So we created, that's what, you know, all in Leon. So Leon County Sheriff's Office, you know, Walt McNeil bought into it. God willing, I will have this week, Secretary Chad Popple, the DCF Secretary, they're all into the solution of the life center, which is a drop-in center, crisis intervention drop-in center, to really target mental health prevention services for our community, man. Like, I really feel like we need to start right now targeting, not waiting to something happen. We need to go. The behaviors are the same. The kids who shooting up kids, they're not the ones with extreme mental health issues. They're the ones with trauma, right? So we can go and find out. We can see the behaviors of trauma, which we're partnering with the FSU, and Florida Institute of Child Welfare right now, a part of the Project Safe Neighborhood grant, to do just that, is to truly understand what are the behaviors, right, that lead to these violent crimes and these behaviors. So that's the solution, is early intervention, what I call and what I'm lobbying for and advocating for. And it's not like it's no line item in our country right now, but mental health prevention service dollars. Right, we need to get in there before something happens. We saw it in education where we say, oh, we can't do anything. We know little Johnny or little Billy is a bully, and he's bullying all the kids, but we can't do anything until he actually whoops somebody's ass. And nobody want to get their ass whooped, so they bring a gun to school and shoot everything up, and now we got an active shooter problem. We don't want to wait for that. Right? We're now seeing kids going out at 14, 15, shooting other kids in the head because – you know, somebody hit his girl, and that's a problem. You know, we got to do something before that happens.
You're seeing the same thing I'm seeing out here with these kids, and that's why I love your answer. Because when you know, sex, people don't like to talk about sex. Like, I get paid to talk about sex. I get paid to talk about the different emotions and the trauma that can come with sex, the different ideas that can come with sex, the good outcomes, the bad outcomes. Like, I get paid to do that. I tell people all the time, I work and live in the real world. Like, when we get off this podcast, I got to stop by Tony's on Lake Bradford. You know how many people scared to go to Tony's on Lake Bradford? But it's just like, no, I'm in the hood. I live in the hood. I work in the hood. I teach in the hood. And so that's what I love about your answers, is you keeping it all the way real. And sex and trauma. Sex, I tell people all the time, the reason why Tallahassee's STD rate is so high is because we have so many young people who are dealing with trauma, and unprotected sex is a great coping mechanism for dealing with trauma, because it feels good. Like you said, releasing those chemicals. Come on, man.
A kid said to me, man, I had more than 5 out of 10 answered when I asked them how do they cope with their levels of stress. They said sex. Like, I try to go get some shown. Like, that's what I try to do, is I try to go hit.
Right.
And that's their reality. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And I mean, you think about this, what does that create, right? That, I know what that, I mean, man, I don't know how deep we can get, but that right there, that is right then, because they, and it's so crazy, they'll pop locks. They're running around popping locks to steal a gun, to sell the gun for some money to buy some J's so they can take the picture on the ground so they can get some vagina. Right? Like, that's
right.
That's the trend. They're not selling, they're not cashing in, they're not selling that gun to get grocery money, although they're hungry, right? Although they're not eating, and although they depend on the school, they're not using that $100 to go buy groceries. Right, they use it. What we may, I used to sell dope to go and help provide. That's not the same anymore, right? It's not. That's not the same code anymore, right? So they're out here doing these things for essentially medication, right? Sex equals medication. That's what they consider medicine. Sex and weed. We put them together, and that's how I cope with my adverse childhood experiences, which science tells me will take up to 20 years off of my life. And we have yet to do anything about it. I'll be damned. I'm not going to do it. I can't. We can't sit back and let this keep happening. Because it happens to us, those of us, those that look like me and you.
Right.
Yeah, that's something that, because Joe and I talk about sex often, on the show, off the show, on other shows. Because sex is what all living creatures aspire to do, for a multitude of reasons. But, you know, when you talk about, like, boiling down those traumatic behaviors to, you know, like, we used to talk all the time, and I remember, because I've been homeless for a stint myself, like we talked about in the last show, and, you know, people always say, well, I don't want to give this homeless person any money because all they're going to do is go buy drugs or go buy alcohol or whatever. And my thing to that used to always be, well, if I'm homeless and I'm in a tragic state of existence, of course I'm going to try to use resources to self-medicate. Like, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Why would like you would do it. Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's the same thing with like, kids. So, all of the hustling, all of the flogging, all of the flossing, all of that boils down to, you know, I need something to help me deal with the stresses that I'm not equipped to deal with. And then, you know, everybody talks about boredom sex. Like, you know, kids in the hood, they just fucking because they ain't got nothing else to do.
Right.
We all did that. We did that.
That's the truth.
Right.
It is. Well, think about it like this. One of the things, so go to that last part of that question, that solution, in this program, what our goal is, what it did for me, hitting the game-winning shot in the 3-on-3 tournament, right, crossing the cat up at center court, right, hitting somebody in the hole, football, right, all of these different things gave me the same feeling of being that winner, like that same dopamine release, right, that same endorphin, that same release I got from extracurricular activities that my family was able to afford to put me in, right? Now, that's something that is lacking here. We got to buy kids. I mean, once you've had sex, I call it like Pringles. Once you pop, the fun don't stop. I can no longer say to Ray J, yo, bro, come over here and ball with me, play basketball with me, after he done already hitting some. He is no longer going to... Like, it's what are you going to say to him that he's going to choose? He's going to choose sex and drugs over basketball and football, especially at 13, right? Like, we do. You see it happen in grown folks, right? Why? They choose them over their kids. Addiction is a disease. And so they literally from 11, 12, 13, they're doing the only thing that they know to do. And by 13, they are addicts. Like, they have the disease of addiction.
Yeah.
And it's no longer a thing that they can control. So now, upon any trigger happening, they're not even themselves. So how do we do it? Like we say, they want money, but being able to attach it to value. We want them to find value outside of sex, right? Being able to find value in success or achievement, right, that they gave up on or they didn't have access to. So putting you into something that you can then feel a sense of value and achievement and self-esteem. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit is important.
And that's what's dope about what I think is dope about the answer you gave is it's just like, okay, yeah, because like I said, everybody else will say, well, they just fucking because they ain't got nothing else to do. Just give them something to do. And they'll stop there. But, you know, like your answer goes to the extra.
People not being real.
Yeah, there's some other things here that are also at play that require social emotional learning, that require, you know, maybe some therapy or some psychological issues. There are some mental things here that also need to be addressed You can't just open up a new garden club for teens
and
expect that to solve all the problems.
And you can't tell them, no, you're not going to just stop having sex. Because they're not. That's not, like, would you stop having sex?
Well, yeah, that's not realistic.
But see, that's what I tell people all the time. First of all, let's be honest with ourselves. How many adults go home to their glass of wine? Go home to their, or have to have their Pepsi every day, have to have their coffee, have to have their joint, have to have their alcohol, like have to do this. Some of us adults who don't look at ourselves as addicts, who look at ourselves as perfectly healthy, have to go home and have sex to cope with the ills of the day. So if we are doing it in our supposedly healthy, safe spaces, why wouldn't our kids do it in their traumatic spaces? We got to be real with ourselves at some point.
And we got to stop, like I said, here's the thing. I'm not giving, here's where immediately, so any programs out there, mentors, life coaches that's listening to this, truancy officers, two things. Don't tell them to go back to school if they're on the truancy list, right? A, they're not in school for a reason, right? They're not going for a reason. And it's not just because they don't want to, right? They might tell you that, but that's because they want to get you out their face. But don't tell them just to go back to school and stop telling them to stop having sex. Here's the truth of the matter. You're going to, like, sex is a part of their life now. Now we have to be able to incentivize and add value in other areas of life, right? You having sex, okay, that's one thing. But how can we begin to put in some social and emotional tools in your toolbox so then when you do see her like a bunch of other dudes' pictures or when he do cheat on you, you don't lose it. Right? You know, because what is it that we're really trying to solve? That's what programs fail to realize. Like, what I do is I'm not trying to create the perfect kid because shit, they don't exist. What? The sheriff's office contracted me to consult with them to reduce violence, right? Okay, so we're going to reduce violence. That's my ultimate goal, not to have you stop having sex. So if we're looking at the behaviors that are around, okay, you're going out and you're possibly popping a lock, right? That's burglary. You're possibly going out and committing robberies, right? Those are the violent acts that I'm trying to stop. What is driving those? Those are all behaviors of some trauma. So if we look at it,
right,
what if I could get you the money, right? Shit, I could get you to J, but you don't got to go and rob a car and then sell that pistol to get those J's. How about this? How about I go through the village and connect with Finish Line, Champs, and Foot Locker and say, yo, let's create life books. So as these kids who we target go to our workshops, right, engage in life coaching, make good decisions, stay their asses out of jail, they can come in here and buy a goddamn pair of shoes off a GP, right, off of just how many sessions and how many hours of coaching did you do. There, boom, you got your J. Right, so now you got your days, and you can go still get pussy. But the thing is, you didn't have to rob or shoot nobody to get it. Because I'm trying to stop the behavior of violence. That's my job. My job isn't to stop, you know, kids from having. That's your job, Joe. Right, if we can all play our lane, you know what I'm saying? Like, now my job is, all right, he didn't rob nobody to get that 200, but now, Joe, you got to stop him from going to use that 200 to smash something. You got to make him invest to figure out. I'm passing him off. But until we can be real as programs and say, what is it that you're trying to do? Not what money are you trying to attain or what funding are you trying to get to, so therefore you're doing this shit. what is it that you really feel like you're called and able to do? What is your responsibility? What are you able to respond to? Right? Not shit. If we can focus on that, everybody, we will, the village, we will pass everybody along so they'll get a little bit of something that they need from everybody until they full.
Yeah. Oh, that's real. That's real. So, we mentioned your book, but we didn't really get into detail about your book. So, can you tell us what's the title of your book? What's the title of your book, and what is your book about?
The title is Finding Life, Finding Love, Identity, Foundation, and Encouragement. Right, life.
Okay.
And really, truly, it's just a semi-autobiography workbook, right? So it has it's designed for kids that don't, not kids, but it's designed for folks that really had a fear or phobia of reading. I hated to read early in my life, right, all the way up until like last year. I did not like to read, so I wrote a book for those who don't like to read, right? So it's no, all of the chapters are pretty short, right? You don't have to read from chapter 1 to chapter 12 to get the main point or any. Each chapter is a complete cohesive thought, right, coming from beginning to end. And really it's a navigation tool to help you along your journey, right? I mean, a couple of the things that we talk about are the American dream, right? Like the white picket fence and all of the BS that comes with that, right? Why, like what's your why? Yeah, your personal motivation and what you're doing. You know, we got different conflict resolution, conflict management, right? A lot of different things that we kind of talk about in that, overcoming your fears, acknowledging your worth, replacing fears with knowledge and faith, you know, the difference between your dream and the American dream. Just a lot of different topics that really I've learned through my journey, and I just share that perspective with those, you know, the readers of kind of, it's not me, it's like you said, Pat, it's not me telling you how, because there's no cookie-cutter formula to it. It's just me empowering you and encouraging you and equipping you socially and emotionally to go back and mine your low moments, right? Go back and mine through your worst experiences. So whatever you discover there, you'd be able to put it in your toolbox to build your dream.
Right. No, that's cool. That's cool. And the fact that you started writing this book when you were homeless. And because what's crazy about that, kind of like one of some of the things we were talking before we got on is, you know, a lot of people are, like now with this corona going on, a lot of people are taking this time just to take off. So I just thought about it real quick. Like, you started writing this book when you were homeless. And so there are a lot of people who are far from that situation, who have free time, who are still not working on their goals. So that just showed you how driven you were to make sure you get this book out, because you didn't even let homelessness stop you from writing your book. So,
yeah, man, I'll tell you. Back then, I was just writing that was a way that I medicated, right, because I was throwing on dope. But there was times when you ain't had no money to get no dope, right? So for me, in those nights, I would just write, like, how did you get here, right? Like, I would go through so many different moments in those times. Like, when you by yourself, you don't got nothing there. No food, no drink, nothing. Only thing that I could think about was my, like, how the hell did you get here? Like, I psychoanalyzed every decision that I made from childhood. Like, when my dad called me a faggot, like, what did that do? That's why you started having sex crazy. Like, I started really, like, breaking every event down in my life and started writing about it. And so fast forward from that moment, it wasn't from then, from homelessness to when I actually, like, started cohesively saying, I'm going to write a book. Man, it was years. It was years. I just started uncovering all of that, and that's where the content for this book came from, was back then, when in those low moments, that's where I was able to go back and relive, like, damn, you really, like, damn, this is what you were thinking. This is what you were feeling. You know, so I had an opportunity to capture. It was almost like taking photographs, like, photographs with words of those low moments and being able to put them in a book from a high moment and share how I got there. It was pretty crazy. It was pretty neat.
Right. Now that's real. Like, I was having a conversation with a coworker the other day, is just talking about the trauma that we've faced over the years, like going to the club and experiencing and being caught up in the middle of a shootout as a 18, 19-year-old. That's traumatic. But then you get excited next Friday to go do it all over again. Then it's another shootout. So it's like, you know, it's a lot of this stuff has been so normalized in our lives that this is what we are supposed to do. And if you haven't done this, then you haven't had the authentic, like, black experience and things. And it's like us getting to realize, like, this isn't normal behavior. It's unfortunate that so many of us have to face these things, but let's normalize healing rather than going through them. That's what we need to be normalized.
Two things that they say that it just proves how normal this is for our culture, for our culture. How many of us are walking around with arm tats that say only the strong survive, right?
Right.
Only the strong. My brother got that shit tatted on his arm. Only the strong survive. That's horrible. That's trauma, right? That's one. And then what is real niggas, right? Like we talk about, like, oh, I'm a real nigga in the street. Like, what is that? That's trauma by definition, right? Like, those thoughts are so ingrained into our culture. We literally believe that the fact that I'm able to be so strong and survive, that makes me somehow strong. Well, shit, if you ain't never dealt with those things, you lightweight on the verge of a mental breakdown, right? Your strength, your endurance, that's all a front. You're going to die sooner because you want to stay in survival mode. Survival mode was never meant to live in. It was meant to survive and get your ass to safety so you can get to some thriving. Right, that's the part we forget. It's ingrained in us. We want to suffer. We want to, like, that's like a patch of honor. I'm sorry, but I'm not trying to have my kids have to go through that.
Right. Right. Now I'm with you. I'm with you, man. Definitely. All right. So, being able to have a chance to evaluate your life, your journey, what you've been through, your ups and downs, your achievements, where you are now. What are you most proud of about yourself at this particular point in your life?
Most proud of? I didn't know when I had so many reasons and so many opportunities to. And I'm not even just saying quit, like, quit and become a nobody, but shit, quit and take a high-paying job and just, like, quit this mission for comfort, right? That's what I'm most proud of. That I'm not willing to compromise. I haven't been willing to compromise, and I'm not willing to compromise none of what I'm supposed to do for comfort. And I think I'm most proud of that because my kids see that, right? Like, we homeschool all four of our kids. Like, they see everything. And so they see no matter what, they pops are not going to quit. I don't give a shit what happens. I'm never going to quit. And when I panic, they panic. So I'm most proud of that I'm never going to quit. And they know that. My kids see that.
And that's what's up, man. When you're able to really, truly evaluate yourself and truly look at yourself, you can truly appreciate the stick-to-itiveness, the relentlessness that you would see in yourself, especially if you keep going. Like Pat and I talk about it all the time, like with this podcast. We went like 3-4 years on this podcast not knowing if anybody was really listening. But we knew we had a mission. You know, we knew we had a mission and something that we wanted to do and the platform that we wanted to create. And we just didn't know how long it was going to take. But now we see that we're on this side of the river. It's like, okay, we're glad that we started. We're glad we kept going. Because like you say, I mean, for a long time, we were just hoping somebody would listen. We didn't really know who was, not knowing it was more people listening than actually we thought. But we just didn't know. So it was like, hey, if we listening to 1.5 people, shout out to those 1.5 people. But keep going. Like, I love that about you, though, the keep going message, the don't quit message. a lot of times we quit too early. So,
man, under no circumstances, you quit, you're dead. Might as well.
Right, right.
A lot
right.
of that, too, is just finding something to do that you like to do. Because, you know, I know when people say it a lot, and it does sound cliche, but it really only sounds cliche at this point if you haven't found something to do that you like to do. And you like, well, shit, everybody say that. Well, yeah, everybody that's doing what they like to do is saying that.
Because
they're doing what they like to do. Because with the podcasting and stuff, like, in those moments, in those early years, like, we were podcasting for us. Because we was talking anyways.
Yeah.
We was already having
right.
conversations anyways. So why not record them and put them out for other people? And it's the same thing, like, with the other podcasts that we do, like in Joe's case with the Fix, he's following sports anyways. So why
mm-hmm.
not put
it,
you know, with my other show, Lessons from the Screen, I'm always researching something anyways, and I'm always
right.
writing down papers about what I'm researching anyways. So why not produce a podcast where I'm researching topics and giving my opinion on what's going on? Like, it's, so, and then it sounds like with what you're doing, you even like when you were talking about being homeless and working on your book, you were psychoanalyzing yourself. You were going back through your life. You
mm-hmm.
were doing that social emotional learning part of everything where you were figuring out what happened, when it happened, why it happened,
mm-hmm.
and what's the effect of it. Like, you were doing that already anyways. So, you know, I think that's where it goes back to, and I think that's what people... So, you know, again, it sounds cliche, but if you're doing something you like to do, especially if you're doing it for you, then it's easy to keep going because it doesn't feel like work. It's what you do anyway.
That's the truth. That's the truth. That's the truth, man. And I love how you said it. It's only cliche to those who haven't found it yet. If they open that mechanism to call it cliche. Now, that's real. It's really real. Right? People who tell me, oh, I want to start a business, I tell them, quit, man. If you got a full-time job, are you ready to have nine? Do you love what you're talking about? You want to start enough to have 9 more hours in your day to do that? Like, that's 9 more hours, right, out of 24 hours. If you don't go to work from your 8 to 5 right now and then get off of work and then do another 8 hours, right, for your business that you want to start, if you don't do that, do not quit your job to start this thing, right? Find out first what you love, like you said, Pat, and just engulf yourself with that and then be consistent and disciplined around it. And before you know it, like y'all, what you do already will be, you know, it'll make a way for you.
Right. Now, that's real. That's definitely real. Man, we definitely had a great conversation with you. We're down to our final question. This is Pat's specific question. And
he called me special today. Usually he called me a retard.
Hey, man, just.
You
I don't know what's up with that sound effect. There you go. There you go. Hold on. I got to do that. Hey, it got gas or something. I don't know what happened to the drum roll. But, hold on, let me try that over again. Here goes, here's Pat's special question. Come on, drum roll. There we go.
So, and yes, Joe, you're still an asshole. for that. So, if you were the all-powerful, all-knowing, all-capable, omnipotent ruler of Black America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
Ooh, what would I change? I would change the color of the American Jesus to what it's supposed to be. I would unwhitewash all of Hollywood. Like, I would put history back to how it really was. That's what I would change. And so then my message to Black folks would be, we are all we need. And to look, here's one, a good lie is hidden so close to the truth that a bystander couldn't tell the difference. We got to research these four terms because we've been lied to. Love, community, Christianity, and financial empowerment. So I would put history back how it's supposed to be, unwhitewash history, and I would tell my people to redefine those terms right there that America told us what those terms meant.
That's a good one. That's a new one. We haven't heard that one yet. And believe it or not, we get a different answer 99% of the time. And that's a new one. And we still get a new answer. That's Pat, you wrote that down?
Of course I wrote it down. I write all of them down.
There you go. I just want to make sure you own it, my brother. All
right, yeah,
that's what's up.
We got well over 100 answers here.
That's what's up.
That's what's up, man. That's
we're going to do something with it one day. Right.
Right on. I appreciate y'all, brothers, man. I really do.
Oh, man. No problem. Before we let you go, how can people get in contact with you? What's your social media? What's your email? What's your website? If people want to get in contact with you for your services or information.
Yeah, bet. Instagram, Kevin Warren Life. That's the Instagram handle. Email is absolutely the best way to get in contact with me. And the email for the Life group is contact@virtuallifecenter.com. That's contact@virtuallifecenter.com. And for more information and things about what we're doing with the nonprofit We Are All We Need, it's info@weareallweneed.org. The website for We Are All We Need is weareallweneed.org. And the website for the Life group is virtuallifecenter.com.
There it is. Man, once again, we definitely appreciate you. You came in and dropped some gems on us, man. Had a great conversation and definitely enjoy you and appreciate all the information that you've given and definitely appreciate the work that you're doing because you're doing real work. Like a lot of the real work that we talk about here on this podcast, you're actually out there doing it. So if there's any way that we can help you, please let us know, man. We'd definitely be there to help.
Hey, listen, man, I was going to tell you, and I tell you live on your show, so they expect it. We're actually competing in the Life Center. We're putting in a grant for some funding to start a mental health podcast. I think I mentioned it to you a while back. It's coming around.
Yeah.
To be able to find some partners to develop a mental health podcast, that the goal is to create a platform that we can reduce mental health stigmas for the Black and Brown community, right? So just being able to try to, you know, create that podcast forum to be able to do that, and we'd like to get the youth involved so they'll have a strong voice in running it. So that's one of the rooms that we've allocated in the new center is going to be a studio. So I would love for you and Pat to kind of put y'all magic sauce on it since y'all been doing this for a long time.
Ain't no problem, man. Definitely no problem. Help them get everything developed and going. So we're just gonna make sure we stay in contact so we can get it up and running.
Yes, sir, man. I appreciate y'all, boy.
No problem, man. Appreciate you, and definitely talk to you soon.
Absolutely, man. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate you, Pat.
No problem, man. Nice talking to you. This was good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm off, gentlemen.
All right. Yes, sir. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was the brother Kevin Warren getting it in. I hope y'all learned something because he definitely dropped a lot of jewels. When he's the CEO of the Life Group, he does his thing with that. Just what social emotional consulting. Social emotional learning. That's what we need. He's also executive director of We're All We Need, Inc. So He's a good brother, man. Like I said, I've interacted with him a couple times in the community, collaborated with him, heard him speak, heard him and his wife speak. So I definitely thought he would be a good guest on this podcast and exceeded expectations, man. So that's what's up. Hey, Pat.
You know, I do find it interesting that because the only other person that we really worked with that talked about social emotional learning was Kristen, Miss Kristen.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Kristen.
The homeschool co-op. So that's real interesting that they both champion the same message. And it's also real interesting that both of them continue to, well, he's mentioned it, and I have no doubt that he will, but it's also interesting that both of them continue to reach out to us for different things they have going on in the community.
Yeah, man. We're definitely there, man. So, man, you know how we do it, though, man. Hey, y'all, remember we have our Black Movie Playoff going on. Our Black Movie Playoff going on right here on the Freedom Train Network. So you can check out what we have going on by visiting the website. You can also visit our social media, Freedom Train Network, Instagram and Facebook, Freedom Train Net on Twitter, but most of the stuff is on Instagram and Facebook, so Freedom Train Network, check us out. So that way you can stay up to date on what we got going on this Black Movie Playoff tournament, and Belly better win. That's all I'm saying. I want Belly to win. Man, what's your parting shot, Pat? Yeah, I want Belly to win the whole thing. You know? Represent for some hood shit, man.
Yeah.
I guess,
yeah.
I don't know.
In your motherfucking face!
In your motherfucking face! Hey, man, my part shot is wash your hands, stay studying, don't act like you're a damn Rona expert, man. With that being said, I am Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train Podcast Series. Shout out to Mr. Kevin Warren one more time. Two fingers in the air like a flare because we up out of here. Oh, we up out of here. Peace. Peace.